So I really do want to say good evening to all of you, to all of us here, that we are right on the cusp of the completion of the second full day of retreat. And I just want to say how really honored I feel to be in this room and on this week-long journey with all of you. That it is really a privilege to be part of this metta field that's getting generated in this room, but also it spills out onto the land and into the other buildings. And I'm hoping that for this rest of this evening, that you can really rest in knowing, rest in acknowledging your good efforts. It takes so much courage of heart to stay steady, to stay loyal, as Temple has said, with this practice. Because all kinds of other things come up as we set the intention to offer ourselves or offer others genuine friendliness, genuine goodwill, kindness, tenderness, metta. And just how it requires us to be willing to feel our strengths and where we feel confident, and how it requires us to be in touch with our vulnerabilities and still to stay steady as the opposite of goodwill or metta arises, right? And the obstacles and the ill will arises. And to be able to feel when the when the waves get rough. Okay. Well, it probably is obvious that I'm a little nervous. I cannot tell you how much metta for myself I had to do, or I was willing to do today, and I was so grateful that Spring introduced, you know, just to be able to offer that kind of compassion to ourselves, right? That I'm here, I care, it's okay. So that we can, so to ride the waves of that nervousness, as if this one 60-minute period of your week is going to make or break your retreat. You know, it's like. But my sincere wish is tonight is to support your good efforts, to be encouraging, to normalize the dukkha of this. It's just what happens. And to encourage you to keep trusting the unfoldment of this practice. It happens in its own way, on its own time. We just choose to show up and be present, to listen to what has heart and meaning, and to, as best as we can, let go of the outcome. To let go of the outcome. There's a song related to metta that I learned several years ago at IMS, Insight Meditation Society, retreat center on the other coast. And it was during the family retreat, which I had the privilege to co-teach for a number of years. And there was a woman there as a volunteer named Mindy, and she was kind of a metta angel for me. And she taught me, or she actually played a tape of this song that had been recorded by the Serrano Loca nuns down in San Francisco. Didn't come from them, but they had recorded it, and so she had a version of it, and I got to listen to it. And we decided that we would use this in the family retreat, And in family retreat, we had little ones from 2 years old up to 13 years old with their families. And then also this group of young adult helpers called YAWS, who many of which, almost all of which, had come through the family program, some from the time that they were two, and then they would become volunteers. And then we had a lot of adult volunteers and help. And so we had this quite a large group. And one of the things that we created along the way was what we called pajama puja. So that we would all come together again at the end of the night, because we would be together in the morning, we'd be together in the afternoon, and then, you know, the different age groups would disperse and the adults would disperse and we'd have things separate and then come back together. And in the evening, it just felt like we needed to kind of come together one more time. And so we would do metta practice, and sometimes we'd sing some songs. But Mindy shared this one that I don't know if it was called this originally, but I call it the metta lullaby. And so to help calm my nerves and also to like be at the edge of my comfort zone, to kind of break through, I wanted to sing it for you. And I don't have the sweetness of voice that dear Teja does, but I have sincere desire to share this with you. And what I want to do is it has three parts. It's a may I, may you, may we. And I'll fill in the blanks. And so I'll do that round. And some of you may know it, because it's been around the bend, I understand. So if you do know it and you want to join in, I would invite you to do that. And maybe by the second round, we'll sing it again, that you can join in. And I have to start it kind of low, because it has one really high note. So, and I'm kind of more of an alto than a soprano. So, may I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be happy. You all join in. Thank you. I feel much better. And in part, I also wanted this to be the reminding us that what we're doing for others, we're doing for ourselves when we offer. When we offer it to ourselves, it fills us up so that we get so full that then we naturally offer it to others. And that we are part of this human experience. We're part of the animal experience and the mineral experience and the elements and the plants. That metta is so much about us feeling our connectedness, feeling our interdependence with each other, how much our lives depend on each other. In the teen retreats, when we would do the precepts or the mindfulness trainings, it was always prefaced with the phrase, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, obviously, I'm not going to harm other beings. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, when I really feel that, I'm not going to take things from other people. I'm not going to take more than I need. I'm not going to take what is not offered. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I'm going to be respectful of the sexual energy that arises in me and be very respectful of the sexual relationships and intimate relationship that other beings have. It's just natural. We're all in this together. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, why would I want to lie to you or use harsh speech with you or bring about division within a community by gossip or even just kind of idly chatter away, use that the energy in a way that disperses and fractionates? Fractures, yes, that fractures myself or others. Why would I want to use, I mean, the power of words is so amazing, right? You know what it's like when someone offers you care through their words, respects you through their words, sees you by the way that they talk with you. You know, and why would I, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, why would I cloud my mind and take in any kind of things that would poison my own heart and mind? Why would I do that? Because if I do that, I'm not going to be able to keep, honor the other precepts, right? So we're all in this together. Same boat, shared humanity. And I'm just very happy to be in this boat with you all for this week. So the title of this talk is called Metta as Muse. And a muse, you know, being a human being or a spirit or even some aspect of nature that inspires an artist, right? To be creative, to be bold, to think outside the box. And really, as meditators, we are all contemplative artists. We've all been given these different hues and colors, this palette of different practices. And it's really our job to experiment with them, to play with them, to find the ways, in this case, for this week, that these offerings of how to generate, to catalyze metta, and play with them. The phrases, the visualization, the felt sense. These are the palettes of these different colors. So that you are creating a practice that is your style. You're creating a practice that can actually activate a genuine goodwill, an unstoppable friendliness, a sincere kindness toward yourself, and then all beings in these concentric circles. So this boundlessness, the spring was saying, it's boundless. Even the Buddha never got to the end of it. I didn't know that. I learn so much when I come on retreat with these beautiful teachers. So we need to consider, I mean, we all have our own temperaments, we all have our nervous systems, we all have our own history, we all have our own conditioning. So we need to work with these materials and find the way that creates for us this beautiful painting or sculpture or whatever you as an artist might think of yourself as. And the title was really inspired by the groups of people that I met today, that I met with today. I told them I so love having that smaller group time. It's the kind of the bigger group that like puts me like at my nervous edge, which actually right now I'm not, so thank you. But I spoke with them about how what I think of the three P's of any kind of practice. And one is to have persistence, you know, which is that being loyal to the practice, bringing the effort that isn't striving, but the effort that says, I'm here, I'm present, I'll begin again. So persistence and then patience to really let the practice unfold. And the third P is play. You know, to play, to be creative, to be willing to experiment. And it was so wonderful today in the small groups to be hearing how that's happening. How people are finding their own way into how to be with the difficulties and also how to feel, how to tap into that flow of metta. So thank you to all of you that I got to meet with today. And I'll look forward to the next 3 days as well. So tonight I want to speak a little bit about a little bit more, because it came up a lot in groups, you know, how the natural, normal arising of metta's opposite happens. Metta's opposite is aversion, ill will, sometimes hatred, sometimes jealousy, sometimes judgment, serious judgment of self and others, self-condemnation, fear, all the different forms of aversion. And that's why metta is the antidote to ill will. It's the good medicine for ill will. But it also can activate it. And so it becomes, has been stated here already, a purification process. And so I want to speak a little bit about that. And also to say that the sister of aversion is sometimes called greed, but in the form of grief and longing, that sense that something is really missing, whereas aversion is often that sense that something is really wrong. But so there's also been these waves of grief that have been felt, and I hope everybody feels the permission to let the tears flow. You know, we don't get up and jump around and laugh and, I was going to say sing, but we do sing. But the sound of someone letting the tears come, letting the weeping come, and sometimes it doesn't sound graceful. It's kind of like, right? But this is a place in which this field can hold it. And just, you wouldn't even know that what that moment of allowing that emotion to be sounded a bit, how that might crack open someone else's heart sitting next to you or give them permission. There's so many tears for so many of us that have been waiting. And when we sit and settle, they arise. And so we hold the tears and the sorrow and the sadness with a sense of kindness, with friendliness. Oh, here this is. So I'll speak some about that. And a little bit about kind of the ways that I've found that work, kind of, I guess it would be what my, how I've taken the ingredients and the contents of the palette and created what works for me. And then a few stories of what I call in vivo metta, in life metta. You know, we have in the in vitro practice, like in the lab, like the sitting, the formal practice, and then there's life practice in vivo. And it's metta in action. Because when kindness is in the heart and the mind, then it comes through the words and it comes through the action as generosity, as patience, of acts, of kindness, of helping others, of being patient with others. It isn't about just sitting here generating it here. It's like, how does it translate out into our lives? And how does the actions of kindness that we see and that we experience, how do they, like a feedback loop, come back and inspire us to practice more? There's been so many research studies in these last years, but one that was like a long time, much longer ago, I read about in a Wayne Dyer book. And he was reporting some research in a very sort of unfootnoted kind of way, but research of observing what happens when people perform an act of kindness. And they did some testing and found out that their serotonin levels went up, which is good brain chemistry, one of the feel-good neurotransmitters, and that their autoimmune system was supported, was strengthened, when they engaged in acts of kindness. And then what they found out, too, was the person who was the recipient of the act of kindness had the same changes in metabolism, the same good benefits happened. And then the one that was even more kind of astounding or surprising or perhaps unexpected was that within the protocols of the test, they were also testing people who were observing acts of kindness. And that just the observation of the gesture of kindness being offered and received, like being in the field of kindness, also affected their minds and their bodies in a positive way. So this is really good medicine all the way around, to know that you may be increasing the serotonin levels in somebody because they're watching you offer a gesture of kindness. So again, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, why would we want to do anything else? And yet, we do. There's still lots of the roots of greed, hatred, and delusion in us that we are working to understand and working to uproot. And it's a process. And we don't have to be perfect at it, because that's just another one of those aversion things, having to be perfect. It's far from perfected in me. But I keep being loyal to the practice because I have confidence in it, because I've seen some of the changes that have already occurred. As have you. Even if you're new to the practice, I can imagine that in these short days, but they probably don't feel short, two long days, that you're already beginning to feel the benefits of generating loving kindness. So a little bit about working with it as a purification process. It's been stated here already, but I'll say it again, just to the context that metta is one of the four Brahma-viharas, the heavenly abodes, or what I think it's Sharon Salzberg who says, she likes the translation of the best home for us. And I think of it as a four-chambered heart, because we do have a four-chambered heart in our body. The physicality of it is, there's four chambers. But because we can consider the Brahma-viharas as something that actually already exists within us, but sometimes we don't have access to, I like to think of it right here in the four-chambered heart, even my physical heart. So when we develop metta and love, so that when love meets suffering and pain, that compassion can arise. It's the second chamber, karuna. Metta, karuna. The third chamber is mudita, or appreciative joy, which means that when I'm feeling mudita, then I'm happy for your happiness, for your success, for all that's going well for you. Whereas I could be jealous, right? Or I could be envious, or I could think, I should have gotten that, or there isn't enough to go around, right? I've thought that before. But I could also go, oh my gosh, I could like sail like on the wings, or ride on the wings of your good fortune. And like the Dalai Lama says, if you're just going to be happy when things go well for you, that's like one option and one opportunity. But if you could feel mudita, appreciative joy, sympathetic joy for others when goodness happens for them, when good fortune happens for them. Then you've just like up your odds by, I don't know, 6.7 billion or something like that. It's a lot. You know, it makes sense to be happy for the happiness of others. So when love meets joy, mudita can arise. And when love meets peace, equanimity or upekkha can arise. So it's really valuable to keep generating the metta because it's the foundation that allows us to open to these other best homes. And could we open to the possibility that it's here right now? That really our nature is to be loving and caring and balanced and generous and wise. That it's within, that it's actually all around us. I can imagine that some of you have had the experience of being outside and you see something and it's like, that nature shows us the good, true, and beautiful. Last night when we walked out, the stars, and then there was a shooting star. It's like, I feel like, I mean, how often, I don't get to see a shooting star very often. It was like, it just felt magical for that moment. And there were several of us just sort of standing, going, you know, looking up together. Or earlier today, walking out and seeing that amazing pink sky. So if we can let nature mirror back to us this goodness, this beauty that's all around us to remind us. And I also like to sense tapping into an infinite supply of metta. It's in here, but it's also, there's like an infinite supply of it that if I activate and find the way to catalyze it within myself, I can tap into it. But just like drilling down for water, for pure water, for a well, oftentimes we hit in the drilling is rock, hardness, resistance, obstacles. And so we do too, as we do the metta practice. I referenced casually the other night a poem by Rumi. So this is one view. Your task is not to seek for love, that kind of grasping after love. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. Now, frankly, we've also had some help building those barriers. So as I read this, I think to myself, yes, but what my job is to not keep adding more stones to those walls. Right? And that's a very challenging task, right? Because we've taken in from many people great unkindnesses. In the Buddhist tradition, it's called conditioning. And we experience we've had this experience that shape our views of ourselves and shape our views of the world and what's possible or not possible. And they come from a variety of sources, some really close in, some farther out. They certainly come from the families that we grew up in. Some of it conditions us to be brave and resilient and creative. And other circumstances have a different impact on us. Our friends help condition us and shape us, our peers. The culture of our communities, both those that we belong to and are included in, and our view of ourselves in the world is shaped by those communities that exclude us, that ignore us, that may even oppress us, hurt us, harm us, has major influence. And so some of us have conditioning that manifests as a quality of unworthiness or never good enough, never smart enough, never enough something, that we can live with shame, self-criticism, even self-loathing, because we've, as youngsters, and sometimes throughout life, we take in the poisons that other people feed us. We take in their projected anger and their projected unworthiness and their projected fear. Sometimes it comes in and we soak it in. In the Buddhist terms, the three poisons again are greed, hatred, and delusion. And I like to think of it as a case of mistaken identity. You know, that we have breathed in that which was not good for us. But you know what happens? The other side of breathing in is breathing out. And part of the metta practice is how we connect with breathing out what we've taken in that feels poisonous and toxic. And we can't just do it by saying, not me, not me. But we do it by when it arises in the metta practice, is that we're able to hold it within the field of kindness, to feel the place in us that feels so hurt, and maybe not be able to, to be able to place our hand on our heart, or on our cheek, or on our belly. And as Spring said, to whisper the words, I'm here and I care. That I will not abandon you the way I was abandoned. That I will not reject you, this part of myself, the way that I was rejected. That I will not hurt you, this part of myself, the way that I was hurt. For me, that's the way of undoing those barriers to love and stop building them. Is that we learn not only not to treat others the way we've been treated, but not to treat ourselves that way. And it takes great courage to stand up against years of conditioning that we feel embedded in ourselves. There's a wonderful writer and poet and cantadora and Jungian analyst. Her name is Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She's a woman of mixed heritage, Eastern European and Mexican. And she's written some fabulous books, one that's really old and is a classic, Women Who Run with the Wolves. But also one called The Dangerous Old Woman and Untie the Strong Woman. And she says something, and I really resonated with in working with what was coming up for me around metta. And she says, one, we're all members of the tribe of the Sacred Heart, of red blood and silver tears, and that we're all Scar Clan, that we've all lived through some great something, and some of us have lived through many great somethings of severance, of laceration, of abandonment, of betrayal. And yet there's something within the support of these practices, which happen in other traditions as well. I mean, metta is not Buddhist. Loving kindness is not Buddhist. It's in all the perennial wisdoms, caring for ourselves and others is a major part of it. Reverence for life, respect for life, all life. But as we learn to live with what we've experienced and begin to not identify with so much, to offer ourselves what we didn't get, to find the mentors in our lives and the support in our lives to be able to help us learn how to love in a way that is so genuine and so real, that we become able to live even more deeply. And also to grab onto the hands of people that we want to be able to support to live more deeply and with more freedom. It's all part of the human condition. Within our tradition, the Buddha said, among other things, if it were not possible to free the heart from entanglement in greed, hatred, and fear, I would not teach you to do so. But just because it is possible to free the heart from entanglement in these unwholesome, unhealthy states, I do offer you these teachings. So to remind us that, in fact, I remember today in a group, one woman saying, well, you know, I feel like there's the possibility that these practices will save my life, I think she said, that I have hope. And there's something quite beautiful in hearing the Buddha saying, I wouldn't teach you this if it didn't work. I just wouldn't do it. But it does work, and I am teaching it. And these are offered. This path to disentangle the knots in our hearts. There's another tradition that's very precious to me from living in Russia, having amazing experiences, unsolicited, unexpected spiritual experiences in Russian Orthodox churches. And so I wanted to read to you part of writings that are a combination of a book that had these beautiful icons, beautiful paintings, and then reflections by Mirabai Starr. Mother of fairest love, of holy awe, of perennial wisdom and of hope in the face of despair, teach me to love as you love, unconditionally. Transmit to me the secret code that unlocks my opinionated mind and sets me free to play in the open fields of the heart. The secret code. So we can think of metta as the secret code. I think somewhere I was reading, someone was talking about the secret sauce was metta. But the secret code to unlock all these opinions, all these liking and disliking myself and others, the attachment to views and opinions is one of the deepest sources of dukkha and suffering in ourselves and the kind of dukkha and suffering we cause in the world when we're attached to our view being right and the other's view being wrong. So the secret code. And within the practice of metta, it's said that the proximal cause of the arising of metta is to see the good, to see goodness in ourselves and others. Many of you may know Sylvia Bornstein. She's been around a long time, beautiful Dharma teacher here. And she says that loving kindness erases the imperatives, all the likes and dislikes, all the views and opinions. And maybe the best view is just to love everyone. That's a little easier said than done, but maybe that would be the best view if we had to have one, is that we'd be willing to see the good, true, and beautiful in each other. You know, each morning, Teja begins with a namaste to us. And there's many different, there's different ways of interpreting that, or translating that rather. But one is that the light, the divine in me, sees the light or the divine, the goodness in you. Because it isn't our personality selves that can see the goodness. That when we see the goodness in another, it's the goodness. Sorry. It's the goodness. It's part of the trouble of talking with my hands. The goodness in, it's the goodness in me that sees that. It's not the personality that sees it. And yet, so often is one personality tangling with the other personality and completely forgetting that there is something deeper in us that we could be responding from. There's a kind of classic story that often is shared at Metta retreats. And I actually thought the temple would share it last night because of his time in Asia. But it's a real life example of a lovely simile, a way in which this experience is similar to being able to know and sense the purity and goodness in ourselves. And this will probably be familiar to many of you. But the story goes like this, that there's a very old temple in Thailand's ancient capital, Sukhothai. And there was in the main hall this huge statue of the Buddha. And it isn't a particularly good-looking one. The aesthetics weren't great. It was all plaster and clay, and that it had been repainted over the course of a number of centuries. But it was revered locally, and it had been there for as long as anyone could remember. And that Buddha statue had survived all sorts of terrible weather. It had survived armies and changes of government. So the people had a great love for it, its resilience, its survival capacity. And then somewhere around probably 15 years ago, there was some kind of a drought, and it got very, very, very dry, sort of like California. But enough so that the covering started to crack. And some of the enterprising monks started looking into the cracks, apparently with their flashlights, to sense, you know, what was the structure and what the infrastructure was like and what they needed to do to patch it, to repatch it again. But apparently when they shined their flashlights in through the cracks, what shined out was this gold light. And they'd look into another crack and they'd see the same thing. They'd look in, instead of seeing like darkness, they'd see gold. And that continued until they removed the plaster clay covering and found, oh surprise, the largest solid gold Buddha in the whole area of Southeast Asia. Imagine that kind of find. And also, it was the monk's understanding that the statue had been covered over to help it survive through all the difficult years. Just in the same way that we have covered over or have had help covering over what we could consider the innate goodness and beauty in ourselves through just being human and the experiences of growing up. And so we've covered over that awareness and that vulnerability and that aliveness because it didn't feel safe to have it so exposed. There's quite a lot of wisdom in, you know, having the defenses that we have. But there comes a time in our life where they're not needed anymore. They're like get outdated. And we have other ways of creating safety for ourselves than keeping ourselves caught in those views and opinions of ourselves, that protective layer where nobody can get in. So we can think about this, that it's like reconnecting with that gold. Reconnecting. And again, you can think of it, that's a view. You know, you can. It's for me, it's a better view to take on than some kind of inherent badness. Right. But reconnecting with the gold, can we be open to this? That our inherent nature is love and wisdom, or that it's present in ourself and others. Could we be open to that view? Another little reading about cultivating the good. This is from Sharon Salzberg. Can hardly do a metta talk without bringing something of Sharon's in. And I love the way she says this. Cultivating the good means recovering the incandescent power of love that is present as a potential in all of us. All of us, excluding no one. An awakened life demands a fundamental revisioning of the limited views we hold of our own potential. Revisioning, I like that word. To say that we cultivate the good means that we align ourselves with an expansive vision of what is possible for us. And we use the tools of spiritual practice to sustain our real moment-to-moment experience of that vision. And the tools that we have that we're working with this week are metta, and then how it also flows into compassion, and will probably over the course of the week flow into mudita as well. This was sent to me by a friend that also wrote a note on it. The other night I mentioned that metta and qigong were fundamental, essential practices for me after an accident that I was recovering from, a motorcycle accident. And I've never read this out loud, but it was so, when I reread it, I brought it for the quote from Sharon, but when I reread what this friend had written, it so exuded the quality of metta, of kindness, of genuine goodwill. And it also was reminding me what it meant to be the recipient, what it meant to be the recipient of this man's loving kindness. That I'm sure my serotonin levels went up, and I'm sure my immune system was boosted. So he wrote, "Dear Dorian Ted," Ted's the name of my husband, "I heard of your accident. I'm sorry this happened to you. I think about you both and wish you speedy, full recovery. May you get the best medical care. May you have the most amazing visitors," which we did. "May you have the..." Oh, it's the most encouraging visitors. I supplanted amazing in there, but they were amazing and encouraging. "May your heart expand to include your own pain and suffering. So many things and words and well wishes we send, and probably you just want to come home," because we were in the hospital at that time. And the last one, it was just so touching. May your practice deepen and all your needs be met. Love and wishes." And it did. You know, earlier there was also a reference to that what is difficult is what can actually crack our hearts open. The Bodhisattva vow, "May this too awaken my heart and mind," so that when you're in your practice and the rough stuff comes up, you can remember, oh, great, here's aversive mind, here's an opportunity, rather than collapsing into replaying that same self-aversion or other aversion, that I could not feed that part of me. Right? I could see it's just aversion arising, it's just anger arising, it's just fear arising. Can I let it be held in the field of metta and not loop into it? See it coming up like poisons leaving the body. For those of you who have ever done a fast of any kind, you know, your face breaks out and your breath gets really rank and your intestines and your digestive system is clearing out. It's the poisons rising to the surface so that they can rise up. What's on its way up can be on its way out. And that we begin even in today in speaking with some of you and hearing that there was actually some laughter and some humor with some of what was arising. Oh, there's that again. And I can come back to the metta for myself. That I can come back and offer metta to the one that's so angry, that feels so rejected, that feels so unloved. I'm here with you right now. I'm here with you. Or the imagining of yourself as a child at that age, where there was the hurt and where the anger came from and where the anger was actually instilled. that we can actually work with ourselves by sensing ourselves at that age. And it may not even be sitting in front of you, the visualization. You may find yourself holding that child in your lap and saying, I'm here. And I see your beauty, and I see your goodness, and I see your suffering, and I will not abandon you. It takes a very porous heart to practice metta, to be able to feel, to bring to mind whatever catalyzes metta in you, and then to let it fill you. The other morning, we did the guided meditation around, can we just let it circulate through our bodies? Can we offer metta to our bodies? Sometimes it's too hard to offer it to ourselves directly. Sort of like, that's too much. So we can just start, can I offer metta to this body, to feel the miracle of this body, to feel the myriad of processes that are going on without me doing anything. Thank goodness, it's not up to me to regulate all the metabolisms that are going on in my body, to make my heart beat, to make my blood flow, to make the liver cleanse the blood. I don't have to do that. It's doing it. The wisdom of the body, can I appreciate and be grateful for that and offer deep reverence and love and kindness and big thank yous to this body? And then to our own hearts. You know, may my heart be filled with loving kindness. May my heart feel safe and protected. May my heart be healthy. May my heart be at ease and peaceful. So to be creative with this, whether you're offering it to a part of ourselves, may the judge in me, may the self-critic in me, may the one who sabotages me, those aspects of ourselves, can we sense what they're really needing and offer it to them? Can we sense what we're really needing and offer it to ourselves? So the heart becomes very porous, that we feel the love flowing in and we feel the love flowing out. How many of you found the working with the loving kindness practice for yourself challenging today? Some? Okay. And were you able to sort of sense what the obstacles or the barriers were, what was in the way? Was there some sense of, ooh, what is it that, what's the wall I've built, or what's the obstacle? What's the resistance? Was there some sense of getting to know that part of you that's saying, oh, no, 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 you don't deserve this, or whatever it says? Is there some, how many of you were kind of able to get a sense of that as well? Okay, some. It takes a while to make friends with that instead of trying to reject it, to make friends with it. How many of you found that your easy person, your easy being, or your easy animal, you were able to offer the loving kindness to? It was easier for most people. Okay. You know, for some, it's extremely difficult to, it's almost like if I can offer it out there, you know, I can offer it to other people. And sometimes it's like we have our hands out and like it can beam out. Particularly if you've been in the caregiving professions, sometimes we're particularly honed in that direction. And that I've had people work with this experiment, and I invite you to do it. Just like to put your hands out and to sense who you've been able to send it to. Like, where is it, where if the metta could like flow right out of the palms of your hands, just sense who can you send it to easily? Just to sense that person and feel the flow. I see their goodness. I really care about them. I can wish them well. And then to try the experiment of what is it like to say, well, okay, what if I were to offer that same quality of attention to myself? What if I were to start to turn my hands toward myself and just see what it's like? I've had some people say, oh, I can turn one but not the other, or it almost feels like I shouldn't. It feels selfish. I feel guilty. But see what it's like if you encounter any barriers, as you just turn the hands toward yourself and then actually draw them toward your heart. You just close your eyes if you'd like and just feel what it's like if you could just let what you've let flow to others flow from your heart through your hands back into your heart. The heart has to be porous, open. And you may find in doing this that there's that sense of encountering armoring or block, the obstacles. And then to sense that even physically, and if you're kinesthetic like me, then touching yourself has value. For some people, it doesn't like ring the bells. But that sense of if I'm encountering the block, the armoring, the hard edge, the is that I imagine the metta flowing. And sometimes I have to access that, tap into that reserve that I think is the unlimited supply, like drawing it up from the earth and into my heart. And just sensing, what is it like to let the metta, even if it's borrowed metta, begin to dissolve the hardening? So then now we were holding the barrier with tenderness. We're holding the barrier with metta, with respect, and allowing it to dissolve, imagining it dissolving, or using whatever kind of visualizations or felt sense can help you encounter what's in the way and to help dissolve it. And in doing that, sometimes what comes is memories of where it came from, and then we can hold them in loving kindness. We feel ourselves at that age and we can hold ourselves in loving kindness to let the practice unfold, to begin to dissolve the barriers and to let the heart be porous and open. So thank you for being willing to experiment with that. To end, I'll share one story from life. And in 1996, I had the great good fortune to go to Europe on a trip, a celebration trip. And one night, we were in Athens, in a hotel, and there was I could hear a big party going on and lots of music, and you know, and I'm trying to sleep, and it's a weeknight, and my gosh, it's like 11 o'clock at night, I'm thinking, and I'm getting irritable, and next thing I know, I'm starting to otherize these people, like suddenly they're like the enemy. I don't even know them yet, but I'm seething, and I'm vulnerable also because I'm in a foreign country. I don't know, can you call up the hotel and you know, in Athens and say, could you ask those people to turn down their music? You know, you probably can't even do that. So I'm feeling vulnerable and kind of powerless, and I'm really tired. And luckily, as I'm like feeling myself looping in this, it occurred to me that this might be an opportunity to put on a new pair of glasses, so to speak, on the circumstances and the situation. This clarity arose, is like, I need to see those people that I'm turning into the enemy. I need to see them because I know they're really not my enemy. And I know that my life is not going to be successful, or I mean, it's not going to be happy if I try to control circumstances so I'm okay. Not that human beings don't try to do that, but it's like, if I can't get them to be quiet, I'm not okay. Like, what kind of insanity is that? So I I didn't have any trouble finding where they were because the music was so loud. And I went, I followed it down, and it was in one of the common areas. You know, it wasn't in somebody's room. And I just thought, first, let me just sort of, I'll just sit down in the little lobby area. And the doors were open, and there was this really quite wonderful Greek music being played. And I noticed there were families, children, and then I'm thinking, they get to be up at 11 o'clock here? I don't get to be up at 11 o'clock partying with my family. But I was happy for them, actually, that a mudita arose. And I saw these people enjoying life. And they were celebrating something, I don't know what. And I felt the shared human experience of being joyful with others. And that I kind of basked in it from the edges. You know, I kind of let that field of joy and happiness, I invited it sort of in to myself. And what I found, what happened, was the animosity dissolved, the judgment dissolved. I was no longer thinking of them as being in the way of my sleep or my whatever it was that I was wanting, some quiet. And I just sat there and I let the sweetness of reconciliation grow in me. You know, it's like I was disenchanted in that moment. I don't want to feel this awful, so let me go and make contact. Let me remember how deeply our lives intertwine. And as that sense of reconciliation, which most of us know, you know, when you're like this about something or with somebody, and then there's a resolve to it, that the kind of sweetness of that, that I could, and then it was very, very easy to have a genuine goodwill toward these former enemies of mine. They were no longer the other. They were people enjoying life, and I got to bathe in that. And so with a lot of joy, it was easy to say, may you be happy. You obviously are, and I'm happy that you're happy. You know, may you be peaceful, may you be healthy, may you be well, and your children, and their children's children. It was like just to be able to have the, to offer metta and goodwill toward people who some minutes before I had thought of as the other. And then it was like, yippee, this is fun. Mm-hmm. So metta can have this quality of what is it like to really connect with others and genuinely wish them well. So in that way, it was like making peace by not accepting the view that I had, but being willing to have another view of connectedness and of caring and of being a part of something rather than being excluded from something. So, I know I'm over. I'm going to read one last short poem. This is a poem by Donna Markova from a book called I Will Not Die an Unlived Life, Reclaiming Purpose and Passion. She's a woman who was a breast cancer survivor. So let us swing wide the doors and windows of our hearts on their rusty hinges so we may learn how to open in love. Let us see the light in the other and honor it, so we may lift one another on our shoulders and carry each other along. Let holiness move in us, so we may pay attention to its voice, however small, and give ourselves fully with both hands. So thank you for being willing to come here, to leave your homes and family and friends, and to come and practice with loving kindness. And my greatest wish for all of us is that the barriers to loving kindness will have their fill of metta and begin to dissolve so that our hearts can be that open and that we can give ourselves fully to life with both our hands. So thank you for your kind attention. And we have some time for walking practice. May you walk with metta in your heart and your feet. And maybe like light, you know, like light, lighthouses. You know how the light goes like all the way around when you see that? That our hearts can be like the light of a lighthouse. And that as you walk, you might just sense sending it out. And knowing that what's coming out from other people is being sent to you, and to be open and porous enough to receive the metta from others. So thank you for your kind attention and for your practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.